This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It is just after 12 o'clock. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio today by...
Jeff Sandu.
And Audrey Raj.
Not the terrible twosome. I need to find a new name for you two. You and Arvin are the terrible twosome. You two, I'm not quite so sure. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with this show this afternoon, remember the WhatsApp number 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. I'm suspecting you might want to get in touch today. We're going forward with more Facebook shenanigans. That's all coming up in just a few minutes. We're starting off with the story about how Mark Zuckerberg has basically hit his users with the hard truth by saying, look, you guys agreed to this.
You signed up for this.
You let me do it. Next story is PeopleLender from AXA and AFIN. It's an SME's insurance protection and some alternative funding. That's all coming up in a little bit. Odds with the details on that. Aging Japan and how robots may have a role in the future of elder care. All very interesting stuff.
Don't look at me.
I'm not. Why would I do that?
You totally did.
Thankfully, this is radio.
It. I know you're a tech guy, and I know you have this big love for all things electronic.
That's not my story.
Anyway, next story. A tiny wearable that will know what you've been eating, drinking, and smoking. Now I will look at Jeff. Final story to wrap up with. The booming online luxury goods sales convert watchmakers to the web. People with posh, fancy watches are now buying them online. Right. Let's start off with his Facebook story. It's been going on all week. It was going on all last week as well. Now we've got more details coming out.
Let's play a clip first.
Let's have Steve Jobs, shall we?
Privacy means people know what they're signing up for in plain English and repeatedly. That's what it means. I'm an optimist. I believe people are smart. And some people want to share more data than other people do. Ask them. Ask them every time. Make them tell you to stop asking them if they get tired of your asking them. Let them know precisely what you're going to do with their data.
Amen.
How much do we miss Steve Jobs? Like his visionary, he predicted this. This was in 2010. He had a chat during one of the D3 conferences with Walt Mossberg, right?
Yeah.
And they were talking about privacy. And guess what? One of the audience in that room was Mark Zuckerberg.
Right.
Mark Zuckerberg heard all this. And what we're seeing now is absolutely the opposite, right? So Steve Jobs mentioned there, like, you know, privacy is about people understanding what they're giving, right? And it's you ask them. Granted, some people want to give more privacy, more data than you know, some other people because they feel there's a certain benefit to it. But like Steve Jobs, ask them. Ask them every time. Ask them until they get tired of it or until they come back to you and go like, hey, you know what? You can just take this. Or you stop taking this from me. So right now, though, it feels like Facebook and what they're doing is complete opposite of the whole idea of, oh, you know, privacy is something that people are, you know, they should know about what they're signing up for. People are smart because the way that Facebook has been doing this whole, you know, Cambridge Analytica scandal with the data leaks that, you know, previously they had before as well, it kind of feels like Facebook's just kind of mocking people itself, every one of us. And like now, you know, Mark Zuckerberg recently came out and said that, like, you know, what's the hard truth is you signed up for this, like you agreed to this because it was there in plain English. We're like, no, Mark, it wasn't.
I object to it being in plain English. Plain English would have been when you have an agreement that you sign up for that in two or three sentences says, okay, if you want to use Facebook or you want to use our service, your data will be collected and it may then be sold to other parties. Just in one paragraph.
That is one disclosure, but also trying to, well, tell you in broad terms what your data will then be used for, where it will be disclosed, I mean, other platforms that it will be disclosed on. That is not in plain English.
Right.
The privacy terms.
Yeah. So over the weekend, Android owners, they were displeased because they discovered that Facebook has been scrapping their text messages and phone calls, metadata in some cases for years, in an operation that's hidden in the fine print of a user agreement clause until Ars Technica, one of the tech blogs, reported it. And in the current iteration of Facebook Messenger, the application requests for those who download it to give give permission to access incoming and outgoing calls and texts and all these logs, right? But the thing is, though, buried inside those data caches were very unsettling amount of specific, detailed information. In some cases, you know, every phone call, text messages that has ever sent or received on their phones. And this includes like time, duration, even the metadata of every text messages that has been sent and received.
Mm. Also the location.
And the location as well. Mm. And it appears like, you know, the thing is, Facebook came out and says like, you agreed to this. But yeah, we agreed to give this information, but to the extent, we don't know. It was never plain sight. Like, to what extent will I be sharing this data? What are you going to be doing with this data? It was never there. Mm. That is the issue.
The thing that bothers me here is they use terms like, oh, we just collected metadata. We didn't collect the things you said, the content of your conversation, the content of your text. But just metadata itself, you know, it can actually picture your habits, your routines, your social circles. Isn't that more than you agreed to in the first place?
This is exactly the kind of data that, you know, like private detectives would use, for example.
Yeah.
If what was the Serial, for example, whether if you've ever listened to that
cell
podcast,
towers.
And they used cell towers to kind of, you know, triangulate where you were and what you were doing at a specific time of day and time, you know. It's really intrusive behavior. And let's be honest, you know, we can't sit here and say that us three in this room are surprised by the revelations
that we're
hearing. I think it's something that we were all aware of and we've all been talking about it for the past couple of years, probably even longer. I think it's for other people at home who may not be as aware as to how much Facebook is not just collecting data, but actively manipulating the stuff that you see on your feeds as well.
The key word there, manipulating.
Correct.
That is the problem. I'm totally fine with giving up information or data that I have as long as I'm getting information that I know I need. But
right.
when you're manipulating my decisions into something else, that is when there is a problem. So clearly, the whole reason why Cambridge Analytica was a big scandal is because they manipulated people in, you know, in going one way or the other. What else has happened from this? Who else is doing this? I recently just went on to some of the app settings in Facebook itself. I had like over 1,000 over apps, and none of them are actually used on a daily basis on Facebook apps. So I have to like revoke all these access that they had. And you know what I was scared, like some of the scary bits that I found? I was going across, there were some Chinese survey apps that I've, you know, apparently given access to, which I have no idea why. And there was a very scarily amount of Russian apps that I apparently have given access to as well. And I know they're Russian because they're just .ru, and like, you know, they'll be like abcsurvey.ru, and I've given access to them. And I go like, hang on, man. I don't think so, I did. So, you know, maybe you should do your own kind of
Absolutely.
Check and stuff, right? So
go through and check which apps you've actually given permission to on Facebook to kind of share your data. Of course, this is the story that we're going to be running through throughout the rest of the afternoon. Tell us what you think about this whole thing. I mean, we have a bit of a question a little bit later on about whether or not you trust Facebook to obey your privacy laws, you know, with all of this coming up. But we just want to know what you feel about this whole thing.
Yeah. What are you doing with all these things that you know, it's clearly on front pages in the newspaper. You've seen it. You've read it. You've heard about this. Has this affected your usage of Facebook? Have you gone on and done what I did where, you know, I go into my app settings and I revoke some of this access? Or do you just not care?
Right.
Because I have a feeling that a lot of us just really don't care. In the US, let me just pick up. There's a story that came out that fewer than half of Americans trust Facebook to obey US privacy laws. In Germany, a Sunday newspaper found 60% of Germans fear that Facebook and other social networks are having a negative impact on democracy, and nearly three quarters of Canadian Facebook users said that they will make at least some changes to how they use social media platforms in the wake of this data mining scandal. So what are we doing? Are you actually actively doing something about this, or you just don't care?
Right. There you go then. Let us know what you think on WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio. We need to move on to story number two. Audrey, tell me all about this thing that they're calling Fundastic.
So AXA Affin General Insurance has teamed up with People Lenders in Jalan Berhad to operate a peer-to-peer financing platform known as Fundastic. What a interesting name. And so what Fundastic will do is it will address the issues of lack of business protection and capital constraints among SMEs. So what Fundastic offers is flexible, affordable, and trade-specific protection to ensure SMEs' business continuity and sustainability. There are many SMEs who are apparently unprotected. They operate in a small and medium scale and do not usually take business protection as their priority, but this is a necessity. This is what Aksa Afin says. And also, Fundastic will support their business funding needs through P2P financing by connecting them to mass retail investors. So Fundastic is basically an online crowdfunding platform. And according to Aksa Afin, crowdfunding in Malaysia is expected to grow after the introduction of regulatory framework for equity crowdfunding a couple of years back. And here's a story that I heard from Han, who actually interviewed the Fundastic people yesterday, and this will be aired tomorrow on Ringgit and Cents at 9:30 a.m. He said that there was one SME that put in a request for 70,000 in funding, and he managed to obtain that 70K in funding in a matter of 57 seconds.
What?
Wow.
Exactly. That was my response to what,
57
right?
57 seconds.
Yes. And here's another interesting fact, right? Over 50% of the investors on Fundastic are actually millennials. They're 35 years or younger. And this is according to Securities Commission data. And this is because I think in the best case scenario, you can basically get returns of up to 20% on your investment. So for more information on that, it's Fundastic will be on Ringgit and Cents 9:30 a.m. tomorrow on the Morning Run.
One question. Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, it's really important because according to the World Bank report in 2016, 97% of businesses established in Malaysia are SMEs.
Yes.
Interesting.
97%. Yes. So, you know, that's a lot.
And they contribute to more than a third of Malaysia's GDP.
My question is, though, I mean, of course, if they're offering funding and lending and whatever, do we have an interest rate of what they would charge?
Yes, they do. I think it's like a 5.88% per annum. I think that is what the interest rate that will be charged on the funding. But as an investor, I think the returns are much higher.
Right.
I'm not sure. I need to listen to the interview that's happening tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning at 9:30 on Ringgit and Cents. And of course, we're going to take a break with some music coming up in a second. Just a quick reminder, though, we are asking you about your thoughts on privacy issues with Facebook and them sharing your data. Share your thoughts with us. We are on WhatsApp, of course, 018-789-8899, or of course on Twitter at BFM Radio. Music coming up from Eric Clapton. It is Gotta Get Over here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Audrey Raj.
Jasandu.
We started off the show today with a story about Facebook, unsurprisingly, how Mark Zuckerberg has hit users with the hard truth. You guys agreed to this. It's your own fault.
Mm-hmm.
According to him, I've also was reading today, you know, he was called in front of the British Parliament.
Yeah.
He's not going. You know that. He's sending two executives in his stead. The British MPs are furious that the CEO of Facebook is not attending.
Also, in Singapore, there's that video that's going viral, right, about the Singapore lawmaker that's questioning Facebook's, some of the officials from Facebook in Singapore, because Facebook has an office in Singapore,
right,
one of the main offices in Singapore, and that video is really good.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Really good.
We should probably share that on the BizBytes page a little bit later on. Now, we have been asking you then what you think about this whole scenario, this whole situation. Yeah. Carrying on from what we started off with at the beginning of the week, what do you think of this whole thing about Facebook? And the deal of your privacy just been sold off to a whole bunch of companies. Audrey, what have you got?
Well, not as many messages as we're used to, but we have a few. The first one is from Ron. It says, I get it that Facebook would own any content I post on their site, but owning all of my calls and texts just because I use their messenger service on my Android phone, that's beyond messed up. That's criminal. That's what Ron says. Another one. This is more of a... okay, this is interesting. Facebook, where folks shared each intimate thought and gasped when their data and secrets were bought. That was from Cassandra.
Clever.
Another one here from John, who said, in 2009, Facebook's Zuckerberg said he'll never sell your personal information. Well, guess what? He lied. He's been selling it. He's a liberal, so fake news media will give him a pass for lying.
Oh, my word.
But didn't he started Facebook with a lie as well? Right? Because, you know, remember he... Well, it was you know, stolen from the idea was stolen from the Winklevoss twins and stuff, right? So it was kind of, in a way, you know, can you really trust Mark Zuckerberg's words?
Didn't it originally stem up from that website Hot or Not?
Face Smash.
Right.
The thing is, it's so weird. Like, you know, Audrey's saying, like, normally we would get a lot of responses for this, but, you know, when it comes to Facebook, we just go about our daily lives thinking it's not going to affect us. So, like, you know, come on, guys. Like, there's some ways they're manipulating you. Yeah. So think about this.
You have to remember that, you know, the stuff that you click, the stuff that you like on Facebook, the stuff that you share, alters the way in which the algorithm works, you know, so you will then be creating your own bubble.
Yep.
Now, the interestingly, to kind of combat that, recently, Mozilla, the people who make Firefox, have released a little extension. It's called the Facebook Container. So you download that, and whenever you, what it does is you first log into Facebook, it then clears all of your cookies and all of your history, and then from every moment afterwards, if you use Mozilla, everything that you do with inside that little box is private. So when it opens a website, it opens it outside of Facebook, so it's not connected, so your data is not leaked.
Mm. Mozilla as a corporation has always been trying to champion the freedom of internet and you know, the data privacy issues and stuff. But I don't want to be using Firefox just to order in order to use Facebook in that clean fashion way, right?
Yeah.
Do something, Facebook.
Yeah. All right. Do let us know what you think then. Keep the messages coming in on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Moving on to story number three, aging Japan. Robots may have a role in the future of elder care. We've kind of touched on this before a little bit, but allowing robots to help care for the elderly, a job typically seen as requiring a bit of a human touch, we might think of it as a bit odd, but many Japanese see them as positive, largely because it's been depicted in popular culture and media as being friendly and helpful.
Mm.
The friendly, helpful robot over in Japan. According to 84-year-old Kazuko Yamada, here's a quote, "These robots are wonderful." She says that many people live alone these days, and a robot can be a conversation partner for them. It will make life more fun. Now, here's the problem. There's a lot of obstacles because, as we know, Japan is an aging population, and there's an awful lot of helpers are going to be needed to look after this aging population. There's a shortfall of 380,000 specialized workers.
Wow.
And that will be there by 2025. Japan are taking steps to allow foreign workers in for elder care, but one of the big problems is that you have to take a Japanese exam.
Language
barrier, yeah. So as of the end of 2017, only 18 foreigners held nursing care visas.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? That's crazy. But authorities and companies are also eyeing a larger prize, a potentially lucrative export industry, supplying robots to places such as Germany, China, and Italy. And this is something that's been pushed by the Ministry of Economic Trade and Industry. You know, they really want to move these robots out. And it's not just like what you'd imagine. It's not just some silly robot telling you, you know, what to do in the morning. These are stuff that, when I first read about this, one of them, it looks like a baby seal. You may have seen it.
A baby seal?
A baby seal, yeah. It's got these big eyes, it's furry, and it makes the sounds of a Canadian seal. Now, I know it sounds very specific.
Right,
Rich. I know, but that's
very
what it
specific.
Does. I know it sounds ridiculous,
yeah.
But for these people who, you know, can't have a live animal, for example, where they're staying because of whatever reason, this thing has really, really made a difference. It's got these people bonding with this inanimate object, and you can see them taking care of it. You know, this, and they're not cheap. I think they're at 20,000 euros or something ridiculous.
That's the thing. How much is this going to cost? It sounds expensive already.
Exactly. And that was my thinking, is that, you know, is the cost of buying robots for these people, does it kind of outweigh the need for training people in the specialized industry?
Well, it has to start somewhere, though, right? And you know, I guess this is the first step of creating robots that behave like humans or like animals, that you can give that sort of same kind of companionship that a real life species would give, right? And I'm sure later on down the road, this will be the norm.
Well, METI, the trade industry, are assuming so. They're hoping it will grow up to an industry of $400 billion by 2035.
It would definitely be, because again, you've talked about, you know, how it's difficult, one, to just find the right people to do the job, and then you got to train them to do that job. So why don't we just invest that money on something that has a much more better sustainability? Because robots could last for years, right? For hundreds of years.
But what about, you know, for me, when I get older, what I'd like, apart from me being the grumpy old man, you know, I like that element of a human touch, you know, being able to talk to some real person and have that bit of feedback and, I don't know, maybe a hug and a pat on the back.
The dream is to be able to give you the same kind of sensation that
Correct.
A real human would be able to give you as well, right? That is the dream that they're trying to get at. So right now we're seeing it's the first iteration. You go like, oh, it's weird. Like, it's, you know, it's a bit creepy to shake hands with that robot. But.
Yeah, I think it's just because we are still imagining robots as having like an automated voice right, or, you know, like being all squeaky and things like that. But that's not the way robots are going to look like in the future. Yeah.
That's true. I mean, in Japan, the government's definition of a robot is very different to what we would suggest. According to them, a robot just needs three components: sensors, a processor, and a motor or an apparatus. Anything that has those three things, according to the Japanese government, is a robot.
Aren't we then robots?
I knew he was going to say that.
Well, because there's that whole, you know, sort of discussions with Elon Musk has, you know, brought this up, and a lot of senior figures in this space of, the future of humanity have also discussed that, you know, maybe there is that theory we are in that simulated world. So the thing is, they're saying that if we could create robots that, you know, behave like humans, give exactly the same kind of emotions as human beings could, what makes us think that we were not created by something as well in that simulated world, right? So the possibility of us achieving the realism of a human being is not far-fetched at all.
Yeah. Right.
This will happen, and then you may one day stumble across a front desk a manager or someone, you know, in a nursing home, you know, taking care of an elderly person, and you may think that's a real human being, but you could be wrong. It could be an AI robot, right?
So, Right, we had to take a break. Before we go to the break, though, just a quick reminder, we are asking you about your thoughts on this whole Facebook thing. Get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Tell us what you think about it. Are you more concerned about your privacy now? Have you changed the way in which you interact with Facebook? Are you warning other people about it? Have you removed apps? A whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, and also, you know, just a reminder that Malaysia is also set to be an aging population. About 9.6 million senior citizens are expected by the year 2050. Will we be using robots as well? And if you're really interested in this topic, I know that the Health and Living event that's happening on April 7th at Nexus Connection Bangsa South, they have a panel discussion on this. It's called Intimacy in the Digital Age. I think Matt from Culture Pop, he's going to be on that panel. That's going to be interesting because he's the panel's also moderated by Dr. George. So
amazing.
That combination is going to be...
If you've ever heard Dr. George's show and if you've ever heard Matt Armitage's show, oh man, this is just a real fun fair.
This is literally going to be a melding of minds. I'm a little bit worried, but also very interested.
It is so good. It's a really good discussion to have at this point of time because it is changing rapidly as well. But going back to your Facebook question, I have a feeling people are just going to be listening to this.
Don't care.
I'm just going to steal.
We have one text in. This is from Folly, and he or she says, I've never had a Facebook account, but I look forward to the company's demise.
I don't think you're on your own there, Folly. I don't think you're on your own. Okay, we need to take a break now. Music coming up from the Buzzcocks with Ever Fallen in Love, just on the back of Robots and Intimacy. When we come back, more about privacy. It's a wearable device that knows what you've been eating, drinking, and smoking. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Ladies and gents, we're with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. I'm in the studio with...
Jess Undo.
And Audrey Raj.
My name, of course, is Rich Bradbury. We started off a show, the show, about a story coming out of Facebook. Again, Mark Zuckerberg hitting users with the hard truth. You guys agreed to this after another privacy bombshell. We've been asking you your thoughts on the whole...
People don't care,
They
Rich.
Don't care at all. But if you do want to get in touch, 018-789-8899. Of course, on Twitter, at BFM Radio, we have had some messages. Audrey, what have we got?
Well, Anwar here says that he doesn't really rely on Facebook for general news. His sense is most people are like him. Other than what friends are doing, they don't read anything else.
Right. Now, on the back of all of that privacy scare, Audrey has another wonderful story about a device that could tell everybody what you've been eating, drinking, and indeed even smoking.
Yeah, so a tiny wearable sensor has been created that could soon end up taking a big bite out of your personal privacy.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, so researchers from Tufts University in Massachusetts, they've developed a wearable small enough to stick onto a human tooth. So it's really tiny. Wow. It looks as small as like a fancy grain of salt, right?
And it look like you have something on your teeth then when you...
Yes, yes. But they come in different colors.
You've been eating ribs and it's...
Yeah. I was just thinking of the peanuts from the nasi lemak that you had, right? Like, you just got a little small thing there, Rich.
Well, then it'd be well camouflaged. But it will be virtually unnoticed. Mm. But it is capable of wirelessly transmitting data of any chemicals that it comes into contact with. So basically, it's an extended technology, your RFID technology. It's pretty much the same thing. So what it does is these researchers from Tufts University, they set out to create a better solution for monitoring dietary intake. And they've come across limitations in this quest, right? They've tried like huge mouth guards, bulky wiring, and also sometimes they've had to frequently replace the sensors in those mouth guards. So finally, they've come up with this really tiny micro sensor that just sticks onto your tooth and can detect any sort of chemical that comes into contact with. So anything you eat, anything you drink, anything you smoke, anything you taste.
I wonder how it's being powered by. Like, you know, that'll be fascinating to see how exactly it's going to be transmitting. And I'm sure it's not going to be real-time transmitting of the data and stuff. It's just going to be collecting it. And
how does it... It can't store it, surely.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting question again, right?
If it's that small...
It's tiny.
Right?
Yeah, it's tiny.
The other question is, though, if something is that small and it's capable of doing all of these little things, you could have it anywhere and not even realize it's there. You could drop it, you know, there could be one in your bathroom, there could be one in your bedroom, there could be one in your hotel room, and you'd never know.
Exactly. And with everything that's been happening this month with Facebook and all our privacy issues, right? That's what everyone is zeroing in on, you know, the privacy settings. You know, what if this sensor that you didn't even notice could send signals to your vehicle telling you not to start because you've had maybe a little too much to drink?
Yeah.
You know, maybe it will stop you from accessing your fridge in the future if you've got the a tendency to overeat. Mm.
So my stance on, you know, privacy and location or whatever it comes to data itself that we're generating, if it's beneficial for you, then it's great. But if it's manipulating you, then no. So it's very clear and simple. What Facebook is doing with the Cambridge Analytica is it's manipulation, right? What these guys are doing is probably in a different circumstances. They're looking at trying to, you know, maybe save your life. Because if you've had too much to drink, you really shouldn't drive at all, right? But, you know, humans, we tend to just go against that kind of law. And if your car can actually talk to these devices and make that decision, that, I guess, will be good.
Yeah.
But in this case, the researchers here say that this is a monumental invention, just because imagine the difference it could make for people who need to monitor their sugar or their salt levels, right? It could give doctors real-time alerts on patients based on their actual chemical intake, which means rather than wait for an emergency to happen, they could actually send an ambulance to you.
They can preempt it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, we're going to play another clip from Steve Jobs talking about all this privacy and location. He gave a really good example. And this is in 2010 again.
8 years ago.
8 years ago, he talked about this.
Is privacy looked at differently in Silicon Valley than in the rest of America?
No, Silicon Valley's not monolithic. We've always had a very different view of privacy than some of our colleagues in the Valley. We take privacy extremely seriously. As an example, we worry a lot about location in phones. And we worry that some, you know, 14-year-old is going to get stalked and something terrible is going to happen because of our phone. And so, as an example, before any app can get location data, we don't make it a rule that they have to put up a panel and ask, because they might not follow that rule. They call our location services and we put up the panel saying, this app wants to use your location data. Is that okay with you? Every time they want to use it. And we do a lot of things like that to ensure that people understand what these apps are doing. That's one of the reasons we have the curated app store. We have rejected a lot of apps that want to take a lot of your personal data and suck it up into the cloud. A lot.
You know what? It's 2010. Steve Jobs' motto or vision was that. Apple has also changed a lot.
They have indeed.
They have changed a lot. So again, we miss Steve Jobs.
No, and the other thing is, you know, talking about location, maybe people just take, they don't realize what a big deal
I just
exposing
use Facebook
your
to,
location is,
I just
right?
use Facebook to share photos and this to see what my friends are doing. That's all I'm using.
I'm
that's
sorry.
Not, that's what you're using Facebook for, but what's Facebook using you for?
So that's the other thing, because earlier this year, I noticed that most of my friends from my generation, right, they've got kids who are going to school, first day of school. And what happens? They're posting photos of their kids with their school badge exposed, their name tags exposed in front of the school. And what kind of information are you giving out here? You know the child's name, you know the child's school. What's stopping anyone from going up to the school and saying, I am this kid's aunt and I want
to
take
collect
him
them.
Yeah. Yes,
the problem
it's scary.
Is we think we're using Facebook. It's the other way around, but it's Facebook's using you.
Let us know your thoughts, folks. Get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. We've got some messages come in via WhatsApp. What do we have?
Yeah, so Dr. Taranjit from Malacca, I'm going to pick this one. Doctor says, it is not just a violation of privacy, but it's criminal to sell personal data to third-party companies. Best is to delete the app.
Mm. It is, but unless you've agreed to do it, which we all have.
Yeah, so if you delete Facebook, great. But along comes another social media, and you may hop onto that, and then you know this whole cycle will happen again. I think me and Matt, we've discussed this plenty of times.
To death, almost.
Yeah, it's because it seems like we just don't get it, right?
Yeah.
We need to start paying for these services because
right.
that's the only way we have control. So would you pay for Facebook?
Good question. Let us know. Would you pay for Facebook if your privacy and your data was not being shared? Would you pay for a Facebook Pro? Let's just call it that for now.
$9.99 for your family and friends, or $5.
Cheaper than Netflix, almost. Let us know. Get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, or, of course, on Twitter, at BFM Radio. We need to take a break. We've got music coming up from the Arctic Monkeys, followed by the Stone Temple Pilots. When we get back, the final story about how luxury goods are now booming online. You can buy all those fancy watches online. Jeff's very happy. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to BizBytes here on BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Jasandu
and Audrey Raj.
Final story of the day coming up, but before we get to that, we've been asking you a question about what you think about what Mark Zuckerberg has said. You know, you agreed to this, guys. You agreed to us collecting your data and sharing it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because of that, Facebook shares have fell as much as 6.5%, briefly dipping below the US $150 mark for the first time since July 2017. It's currently at $152 US dollars. So, you know, they are slipping. Also, you know, around the world, we've been trying to ask people get in their responses of what are you doing, what are you thinking about this, and like it seems like we're not getting enough responses because people just don't seem to care. They just go about doing their Facebook stuff as usual. But around the world, you know, people are actually making a stance, and we should too. You know, nearly 3/4 of Canadian Facebook users said that they will make at least some changes to how they use social media platforms in the wake of, you know, this data mining scandal. In Germany, 60% of Germans fear that, you know, Facebook and other of the social media platforms have a negative impact on democracy. But over here in Malaysia, it's okay. I just use Facebook to just post my nasi lemak and roti canai and to stalk what my friends are doing around the corner, any bro. So, yeah, come on, guys. We need to be much smarter than this.
Yeah, and you remember earlier this year, we were talking about the tech trends for 2018, right, Jeff? And one of the trends was that 2018 would be the year where you would read through your T&Cs thoroughly, like you know every line of it, because you need to know how your data is being used. So I think this is becoming a reality.
You know, I'm guilty of it as well, you know, signing up without even reading. But ever since this has happened, it's changed. I've revoked some of my apps access on Facebook as well, and you should do the same too. And
agreed.
Should you pay for Facebook is the other thing as well, right? Talking about money, the online retail.
We're going to a happy story.
Happy story. Well, happy if you have, you know, some cash lying around in some bank account that's, you know, in the seven figures and stuff, right? Because we're talking about luxury goods
here.
We're not talking about the AliExpress kind of sale here. We're talking about you know, the real high end stuff. So LVMH, the head of LVMH, Jean-Claude Bever, he said that, you know, they didn't realize the speed at which millennials would take to buying cars or watches online. And I'm like, really?
You can buy a car online?
Hey, yeah, you could. Yeah.
Lazada was selling them online. I'm not even joking. I think it was Lazada, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so as well. So LVMH Tag Heuer, which is a label long associated with motor racing, they're looking to fully build its own shoppable site over the next 18 months. Tag already operates online stores in 5 countries, including the US, Britain, and has a partnership in China with JD.com. LVMH sister brand, Hublot and Zenith, they are yet to follow suit. Watchmakers, they've sort of flirted with the web sales through like a one-off collaboration with multi-brand web retailers. China, interestingly, they've overtook US last year as the leading source of traffic to online luxury watches website, according to the consultancy.
I am so not surprised.
Yeah, not surprised at all. Now, according to Jerome Biard, he's the chief executive of Corum, which is the Swiss brand, watchmaker brand. He said that we want to reassure people while taking into account that today's clients might also like to buy watches at home in the evening while they drink a glass of wine.
Oh, well, there's your clientele right there, isn't it?
There is your clientele right there. Now, the reason being for this boom is because previously when we talk about online shopping, is there was a cap, like, you know, how much you're comfortable in spending online. Once you're spending above, like, for me, it's anything more than 1,000 ringgit. If it's not air ticket, if it's like a shoe or a bag or watch, it's weird to spend more than 1,000 ringgit online.
Agreed, agreed.
I would want to have that, you know, I want my freebies. I would go to the store and demand more of these freebies. I can't do it online. But right now, people seem to be really comfortable with it. Cartier and Baume-Mercier, they're offering up to 2.8 billion euros to take control of their multi-brand site, of their brand itself. And the reason being is because you've got sites like Net-a-Porter who are actually doing this. And these big brands realize people are actually buying, you know, $30,000 watches, $50,000 watches.
I would never do that.
Online?
No, why not? Because you think about it, I would rather buy something that has a brand name, a trusted brand name, that I know that when I receive the product, the quality would be well assured, rather than buy something from
a
China manufacturer.
No, you're right. But that's my concern is not actually buying the object. It's when it is shipped. I've had
delivery.
So many things go missing, you know, when I've ordered, whether or not it's something expensive or not, you know, that's what worries me.
You know what? Net-a-Porter recently, this week, launched the sale of the most expensive item online yet, which is a $480,000 watch made of sapphire by the French label, my favorite brand, Bell & Ross.
Oh,
so yeah,
word.
People will spend $480,000 to buy a watch online, but they won't spend a little bit of money to pay for Facebook and, you know, keep their data secure. This is ridiculous.
That's the $500,000 you could pay for your fake news. Fine.
It is. Ooh, snap. Right, we have to wrap up, ladies and gentlemen. This, of course, has been Enterprise Biz Bytes. Very quickly, we'll run through the stories that we covered. We have 50 seconds. Jeff, please go.
Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg said, you signed up for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then AXA, Affin, and People Lender empowering SMEs with insurance protection and alternative funding via Fundastic.
Aging in Japan, how robots may have a role in the future of elder care.
And then that tiny wearable that knows what you've been eating, drinking, and smoking.
Yeah, and people are buying $480,000 watches online these days. Who talks about, you know, going AliExpress and buying all the $1 stuff now? Come on.
Some people. Anyway, if you want to get this show, if you've missed any part of it, you can download the app from the Apple App Store or, of course, from Google Play, or head over to the website bfm.my/podcast. All the time that we have for today, but don't forget, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. iCar Asia touts itself as the leading car portal network in Malaysia, Thailand, and Indonesia. What is it doing to stay competitive amid a crowded automotive landscape and ever-changing consumer trends? The Breakfast Grill found out more from iCar Asia CEO Hamish Stone. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Meanwhile, some music coming in from The Police with Man in a Suitcase here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.